Did you know that KBOO's daily evening newscast is produced by a team of volunteers right here in our Portland studios? If you've got some extra time and would like to get free training in radio news production, come on down to the studio and get involved. You can learn interviewing, writing, editing, and production skills, all for free, in a fun and supportive environment. Call KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at 503-231-8032 to get involved. That number again is 503-231-8032 to volunteer with the KBOO Evening News.
Carrie from the Oregon Cultural Trust, Oregon's unique engine for funding culture, including KBOO Radio. Oregonians can double the love for culture by making a donation to the Cultural Trust before December 31st that matches the donation they made to KBOO or one of more than 1,400 arts, heritage, or humanities organizations across the state. At tax time, the donation to the Cultural Trust is refunded via Oregon's Cultural Tax Credit. Donors double their impact at no cost to them, and culture across the state wins big. Visit culturaltrust.org to learn more.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need mine.
That's what I want.
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 This is KBOO Portland.
We can't say anymore. All there is to it. We went to the Emperor's ball. The Emperor sang a song about sacrifice. A song about sacrifice. Sacrifice who? Sacrifice what? Sacrifice you. Sacrifice me. The altar of democracy, the altar of democracy, the altar of democracy. Sacrifice who? Sacrifice what? Sacrifice you? Sacrifice me? The altar of democracy, the altar of democracy, the altar of democracy, the altar of democracy. Sacrifice you. Sacrifice me. Sacrifice you. Sacrifice me. Big business decision. Big business decision. Big business decision. Maximizing profit. Maximizing profit. Maximizing profit. Third world labor. Third world labor. Third world labor. It's cheaper that way. It's cheaper that way. It's cheaper that way. It's cheaper that way. Big business decision, big business decision, big business decision. Savings and loan, savings and loan, savings and loan. $1 trillion debt, $1 trillion debt, $1 trillion debt. And there's tax man at the door, tax man at the door, tax man at the door. Telling me I gotta pay, telling me I gotta pay, telling me I gotta pay. And banker man, banker man, banker man. Has the deed to the land, the deed to the land, the deed to the land.
Got away.
the thieves got away. And the thieves got away.
Just
the altar of democracy, the altar of democracy, the altar of democracy. Sacrifice who? Sacrifice what? Sacrifice you? Sacrifice me? Sacrifice you? Sacrifice me? The altar of democracy. There's rich man behind God and the flag. Behind God and the flag. Behind God and the flag. Rich man behind God and the flag. Behind God and the flag. Rich man's taking more. Rich man's taking more. Rich man's taking more. And the poor. And the poor. And the poor get more poor. More poor. More poor. More poor. The altar of democracy, the altar of democracy. Sacrifice who? Sacrifice what? The altar of democracy. All there is to it. All there is to it. We don't believe what you say. We don't believe what you say. We don't believe what you say. It doesn't have to happen like this. It doesn't have to happen like this. It doesn't have to happen like this. We don't accept what you say. We don't accept what you say. We don't accept what you say. We won't roll over for you. We won't roll over for you. We won't roll over for you. All there is to it. All there is to it. The altar of democracy. The altar of democracy. Sacrifice who? Sacrifice what? And the thieves got away. Got away, and the thieves got away, and the thieves got away. The altar, the altar, sacrifice.
John Trudell, thank you. John Trudell, we miss you. I had the pleasure of seeing him live quite a few times. And of course, our what a silly thing to say, quote man from Warm Springs with the vocals, and Mark Shark now lives in Portland with that searing guitar. Yes, sirree. That's John Trudell and Bad Dog with Johnny Damas and with the All There Is To It from Johnny Damas and Me from 1994. Actually, that might not even have been the full Bad Dog band at that point. Anyway, here we are. My name's Paul Rowland, back at you with Wednesday Talk Radio. That song pretty much sums it up for me. Does it for you? Let's talk about that song. We could do that. Sacrifice. The gods of neoliberalism, high finance, end game, end stage capitalism, sacrificing all of us, you, me, the biosphere, the plants, the animals, poor people, people of color. It's pretty much a disaster. And that was kind of a response to the tax plan, which, barring some miracle, will go through today and just accelerate the process is already long, long in motion. Certainly accelerating in the past decades. And now with Trump kicking into some sort of surreal stage of a reality show capitalism. Yeah, so we're going to talk about sacrifice. We're going to talk about gift giving. We're going to dip back into some themes I've been developing over the months, gosh, years now, I guess. Talking about some of the deep roots of the present crisis and how that may inform our responses to the present crisis. Talked last week with Jacqueline Keeler, my monthly co-host guest, about frame of reference, how we don't, we're sort of trapped in this cultural, social, economic, political bubble, this reality show, this Truman Show of whatever it is, you name it, whatever it is, and it's harder and harder to step outside. And I think the fact that we have these ever-present devices, Facebook, Instagram, cell phones, laptops, the later developments that I'm thankfully not that keyed in on, that keep us further and further into this bubble, as it paradoxically does present us some of the only alternative information to the mass media reality show. And but the fact that we're just inundated with this electronic field, that's that itself is our frame of reference. And in fact, it wasn't always this way. I am tendentially a what some people sneeringly call a Luddite, deeply critical of certainly modern technology, deeply suspicious of the idea that we can get ourselves out of the mess that we're in using the tools produced by this mega machine, as it's called. So anyway, I started to talk about sacrifice, gift giving. I want to talk a little bit about some things that have been very influential for me. The mirror of production, the idea of symbolic exchange that Jean Baudrillard talks about, which kind of catapults off of The Gift, copy of which I have in my hand, epic work of anthropology by Marcel Mauss, Mauss. I want to talk what that has to do with the time we're in, the time of gift giving, how that has been perverted and distorted. As Baudrillard says, the mirror of production. It's a distorted mirror of primary social relationships that existed before commodity production, before the rise of hierarchical mass society. And briefly put, my position is that even though this modern propaganda continually, consciously or unconsciously, says, oh, you can't go back, you must go forward, in fact, we do need to look, I guess you could say backward, you could say look laterally to other cultures that did not completely get subsumed by this madness, and look at them for a alternative frame of reference. The idea there is no alternative that kind of got popularized by Margaret Thatcher. There is no alternative to neoliberal capitalism. Most people take that to mean something like, you know, the Zapatistas, that in terms of alternatives, the anti-globalization movement, certainly the No Dapple movement. Those are all good examples, but I think we need to go even deeper to something truly prior to or other than the existing system. But before I do this And if anybody wants to get in the queue right now, the number to call in is 503-231-8187. You know, I just listened, as I almost always do, to Democracy Now!, and Jill Stein was on. The idea that Jill Stein had anything really to do with this madness about Russian influence. It's not madness, because there is Russian influence. But the idea that Jill Stein was any kind of major instigator is laughable. So anyway, there's this article I talked about a couple months back, Trump's Russian Laundromat by Craig Unger. I believe it appeared in The Atlantic. I could be wrong. It could have appeared in a New York magazine, or actually Vanity Fair. I'm not sure. But anyway, it appeared in July 2017. So I just want to, before I get into this deeper excursus, I want to give you my brief take on what's going on with Russia. Okay, so if you read this, you really get this article, Trump's Russian Laundromat. You get a sense that Trump's economic ties with Russia go back several decades. So he made a trip to Russia in 1987, only a few years before the collapse of the Soviet Union. Invited by Soviet Ambassador Yuri Dubinin, Trump was flown to Moscow and Leningrad, all expenses paid, to talk business with high-ups in the Soviet command. In The Art of the Deal, Trump recounted the lunch meeting with Dubinin that led to the trip. "One thing led to another," he wrote, "and now I'm talking about building a large luxury hotel across the street from the Kremlin in partnership with the Soviet government." Over the years, Trump and his sons would try and fail five times to build a new Trump Tower in Moscow. But for Trump, what mattered most were the lucrative connections he had begun to make with the Kremlin and with the wealthy Russians who would buy so many of his properties in the years to come. "Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets," Donald Trump Jr. boasted at a real estate conference in 2008. "We see a lot of money pouring in from Russia." The money, illicit and otherwise, began to rein in earnest after the Soviet Union fell in 1991. President Boris Yeltsin's shift to a market economy was so abrupt that cash-rich gangsters and corrupt government officials were able to privatize and loot state-held assets in oil, coal, minerals, and banking. Yeltsin himself, in fact, would later describe Russia as, quote, "the biggest mafia state in the world." After Vladimir Putin succeeded Yeltsin as president, Russian intelligence effectively joined forces with the country's mobsters and oligarchs, allowing them to operate freely as long as they strengthen Putin's power and serve his personal financial interests. According to James Henry, a former chief economist at McKinsey & Company who consulted on the Panama Papers, wrote some 1.3 million, oops, that's the sentence I actually deleted the end of when I was copying this. Okay, at the top of the sprawling criminal enterprise was Semyon Mogilevich. Beginning in the early 1980s, according to the FBI, the short, squat Ukrainian was the key money laundering contact for the Solntsevskaya Bratva, or Brotherhood, one of the richest criminal syndicates in the world. Before long, he was running a multi-billion-dollar worldwide racket of his own. Mogilevich wasn't feared because he was the most violent gangster, but because he was reputedly the smartest. Okay, this goes on, and then it talks about these various Russian oligarchs and their cronies who rented various properties in New York, in Florida, and how they became instrumental in financing Trump's basically, you know, deficit spending empire. He's sort of this sort of one-man emblem of late-stage capitalism, the way he ran his businesses by going into huge debt, just recklessly spending, and then being bailed out by private interests, notably Russian. And of course, now that Mueller is asking for some of his financial records from Deutsche Bank, maybe we'll get a little bit more of a sense of that. So my sense is this, is that there's two things working. Is that his business model was basically to continue to basically to fail repeatedly, and to be continually go into massive debt, and to get bailed out, and to go into basically, you know, to sign on the dotted line with the devil, as it were, with these Russian oligarch mobsters. And to what extent, you know, he was just indebted to them because they were business partners, to what extent it truly was his complete dismal record as a businessman that led to him absolutely needing those infusions of capital, which is kind of moot. So basically that the indebtedness and the kinds of business partnerships that he was developing led him to a place where he was, I think he continued, despite these massive infusions of capital, I think he continued to be a absolutely reckless business person. And I think he just got himself so far over the head that, you know, he turned to this reality TV to kind of remake himself. And then his last ditch effort, you know, to what extent did he himself think of the idea? To what extent was he put up to the idea by, you know, these oligarchs or whoever else, whatever other interests that he had gotten in bed with? Again, is a moot question, because it basically comes down to the same thing. So yeah, his presidential run was both a reckless last resort and became a crucial move by the you know, as Nafiz Ahmed wrote, by the global petroleum empire. So that's one of his main, you know, he's got the Russian oligarchs, which includes major petroleum money. He's got the, you know, Rex Tillerson and the corporate oil, gas oligarchs, and then he got in bed with the Christian evangelicals, because of course that's the pillar of the modern Republican Party. So now he's having to dance their tune too. You know, he was never anti-abortion. I don't think he had these. He certainly wasn't evangelical Christian. I think he was more like a libertarian playboy type. Probably thought he had modern ideas. But so anyway, so yeah. So I read also a couple weeks ago from American Theocracy by Kevin Phillips, which names those three forces: indebtedness, you know, the whole financial pyramid scheme, which led to the collapse in 2008, and other bubbles. The nature of financialized capitalism, the evangelicals, the right-wing Christians, and the fossil fuel. Those are the three pillars that he talks about in American Theocracy, and Trump is their man. So anyway, so that's what's going on with Russia and Trump, and to what extent they're going to be able to completely get away with it is, you know, could be up to us to some extent. To what extent the institutions will hold and prevent full-blown corporatism, fascism, is still an open question. You know, it might come down to the Supreme Court, which is kind of dicey, but we'll see as it plays out. But we certainly shouldn't stand back and be spectators. But I started to get off on this longer, more philosophical excursus, which I think perhaps Sean wanted to talk about. Are you there, Sean?
Hey, good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Paul, yesterday I noticed was the so-called start of the Great Recession. I guess it was the 10-year anniversary of the official start of the Great Recession. And it got me thinking about the collapse of Bear Stearns, the collapse of Lehman Brothers, and the eventual bailout. And then, of course, instead of it being used as a historical inflection point, much like Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal did, to alter our course and make some major reforms and regulations and things like that. Instead of doing that, the Wall Street bailout essentially consisted of a kind of ideological bailout. So, you know, instead of people instead of people knowing who Chris Hedges is, say, you know, he should be a household name, or Noam Chomsky or Michael Parenti or Cornel West or Barbara Ehrenreich, instead of these people being household names as like brilliant people who've been railing against capitalism for decades, we had this intellectual bailout of Wall Street and this cult of the entrepreneur, the cult of the businessman. Not only did it not diminish, it has actually exploded now. So you have like ordinary people talking about members of their family, oh, my son is going to go be an entrepreneur, or my nephew is striving to own his own business. And I would just like to take this moment to just vomit in the face of all the business people out there, all the entrepreneurs that might be listening, small, medium, large. I just like to puke right in your face right now, because you're the wetiko. You're the sick one. You're the cannibal. You're devouring your fellow man.
You're devouring
the biosphere.
I just like
to puke right in your faces right now.
I feel you. But you know, I mean, how are we really so different? I mean, they were socialized to be in that position, and that, you know, those are the channels that are opened up by this social system.
Paul, I know that you've been part of Earth First. I mean, I'm not going to go into my whole commitment and lineage to, you know, things I've sacrificed, aspects of my life that have been completely sacrificed. But I think you and I both go way, way back in terms of our commitment to an anti-capitalist future for this country.
No, I agree. My feeling is, though, is personalizing it. You know, it has to be done, but it's probably better done in person, because over the air, and it sort of steers away from the fact that we've all been sucked into this goddamn system, and that there's people, you know, there's small business people who, you know, it's like those are the opportunities that are given.
Well just bear with me a little bit, Paul. I'll clean it up a little bit. I didn't mean to be so vulgar, but I guess I actually did mean to be that vulgar, but I'll clean it up here a little bit. I'd just like to simply say that in this environment, in this cult of the business person, you know, we could read authors like Upton Sinclair or Sinclair Lewis or even Steinbeck, people like that. Just call into question ever so slightly the culture of the business person, this culture of the entrepreneur, this notion that life is about pursuing profits, and, you know, just not having any class analysis whatsoever, not having any questioning of capitalism or the environmental effects of capitalism. I'd like to just use this one phone call as my opportunity to just, you know, say, please, please.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up those authors. You know, you first started by mentioning some of the modern ones who, as you said, don't have much cachet or traction. And it's interesting that, but those did. You know,
right.
And why is that? You know, left populism still existed. You had a publication like The Masses,
right,
which I believe had millions of subscribers.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's why I called this morning, Paul. Let's just take a second to stop and really take a look at what exactly took place in 2008. They literally used the power of the state and the public's money to preserve not only a financial system, but more importantly, an entire ideology, an entire way of viewing the world. The staggering contradiction involved in that. It's so profoundly cynical and so profoundly ill. and here we are, and it just goes, it's rolling on and on. And those of us who've been critiquing it for decades, we're just kind of on the sidelines, I'll speak for myself, just in a kind of state of shock. Like, I can't believe this is happening. You know?
No, do you see that movie, The Big Short?
I did.
Yeah, I saw that just like over a week ago, and I was, it was astounding. I mean, it really takes you inside the sickness. Mentioned Wetiko.
Well, even as good as that movie was, my major critique of it would be, like, here are people who are intelligent enough to see what's going on, and yet they don't form a critique of
it.
They look at it and say, how can I maximize my opportunities under
right,
this
I started,
situation?
I started yelling at my mom, who I was watching with, why don't they go to the press?
It's like an entire tradition of muckraking, an entire tradition of anti-capitalist critique has just been thrown into the memory hole. It's right. The United States of amnesia, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, it's always good to hear from you. And
Thank you. I'm glad you
mentioned that 10-year anniversary. That should have been the subject of the show, and it ended up being somewhat the subject of the show.
Right on, Paul.
By accident. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right, you too. 503-231-8187. Sean really brought all those themes that I started out talking about kind of into sharp focus there. Lou had called up and is no longer with us. So Lou, if you'd like to call up again, please do. And feel free to call in yourself, especially if you've never called in before. I run into people. It's kind of funny. Sometimes I'm out in public, at events and stuff, and I'll be talking to someone and someone will overhear my voice. Oh, I recognize your voice. It's always rather embarrassing. But I say, oh, yeah, you listen to my show, huh? Well, call in. So if you're one of those people that I had that that conversation with, you can call in right now. Or you. Yes, 503-231-8187. We're talking about the deep roots of the disease. How did small bands of Homo sapiens, hunter-gatherers, become these rapacious Wall Street hedge fund managers and such? How did we spin so far out of control? Now, there's a few books I've mentioned: The Gift by Marcel Mauss, Mirror of Production by Jean Baudrillard are a couple of my favorites. Of course, Karl Marx can always be read. Society of the Spectacle, I've also got a copy here in my hand, by Guy Debord. We need to have these public conversations. I'm talking to some people about starting these sort of monthly events, debates, conversations, sort of guided conversations, kind of like I do here on the show. I would kind of like to explore that sort of, but in person, sort of like not a panel, just, I don't know, it's something I've never really seen done exactly. But we're looking for spaces, so if you've got any ideas. We've got Joe and Julie, so hold those thoughts, Joe and Julie. First Joe and then Julie. I just want to finish this. So I've given out my KBOO email address. Well, you can always reach me through the website if you didn't know that, kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio. If you go to that and you look at it and you click on, I believe, my name, it gives you connect via email or something to this person. Almost every host on KBOO can be gotten. It basically goes to my personal email, but through KBOO. So, you only get my personal email if I write back to you. So please get in touch with me through that. I've also given out over the months, paulrkboo@kboo.org. And I know I wasn't the most faithful correspondent in some cases, many cases, but I'm kind of feeling re-energized now. And this project, I really like this project. So we're looking for spaces, whether it's a church basement, a cafe. We've got some ideas. We're also possibly looking at, renting a storefront, down the line. I'm kind of throwing this out probably prematurely because the discussions are a very beginning stage. But, no harm in just throwing it out there. Anybody's interested, kind of looking out in the, East Portland, other side of 82nd area. So if anybody, has interest in the idea itself or concrete suggestions, please get in touch with me and we can maybe carry on this conversation, because we definitely do need more spaces where we can get together and do this stuff in person and maybe develop concrete projects and give energy to the resistance that is so direly needed. Okay, Joe, you're up. Hello. Are you with us, Joe? No?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I heard Sean mention the anniversary of the Great Recession of 2007-08 and appreciated his screed against the entrepreneurial ideology.
Oh, no. How'd we lose him? What'd you do, Liam? That's I promised I wouldn't name him when he made a mistake on air. That's mean. I don't even know if it was his mistake. It doesn't matter. It's all good. Here we are. So, Joe, please call back 503-231-8187. Of course, he knows that number since he's also sometimes involved in KABU. But let's go to Julie. Hello, Julie.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning. Hi. I was just calling in direct response to that previous caller. I think he started his stuff that he was saying back based on the Great Recession, mm-hmm. in air quotes, when people, you know, lost their jobs and stuff. And I don't know. I mean, I'm a single mother, and I work. I'm a cobbler. It's a real humble trade, you know. And in that time, I lost my job. I got laid off because my employer didn't feel like they could sustain any employees at that time. And then, I mean, I was real politically active. I remember when I was unemployed, I spent most of my time with my five-year-old at KABU volunteering and stuff. But I started a small business because I felt like it was a way that I could have a little bit of autonomy and be a real contributing member to my community in a way that I wasn't able to previously. And when you have somebody on the air saying that he wants to vomit in our faces and you don't immediately shut that down, it's kind of depressing. You know, I'm a single mom out here raising a kid and I have to make a living. What are we supposed to do?
Well, that was my
reaction.
No, I hear you. That was my pushback to him. But, you know, but the spirit of what he's saying was I think what Joe was going to go to before, unfortunately, he got cut off there. But I think he was getting more at the ideology of entrepreneurialism, how basically, you know, capitalism makes forces us into those roots when, you know, you might perhaps be more interested in working, you know, collaboratively, cooperatively with people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know. I don't want to speak for you, but I certainly would.
Right.
I don't, you know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, I get that we live in this capitalistic culture, and I do feel like everybody else does, really scrunched and shoved in ways that we wouldn't choose. But I've never found a way to not participate in it, because I had to put food on the freaking table and provide a place to live for myself and my son. And at this point, now it's like I'm wrapped up in it, right? I have employees, and so I have to make the money to bring the, you know, it's a big maze. But I don't think that I'd like to hear it expressed in a way that, like, you're saying it without being so crude and rude towards the actual people. I'm not Walmart. I'm not part of that empire, you know. But
no, I
but
hear you.
That's why I love KABU. It says I can talk to you. I can just call you up and talk to you, and that's cool. And a big part of my individual little entrepreneurial earnings goes back into KABU. You know, I've been a regular contributor there for a long, long time, and it's really important. So.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad. I'm really glad you called, because your pushback was way more direct and grounded in reality than mine was. I personally, you know, I have an odd situation where I'm taking care of my mom, and she happens to have enough money that had been invested by her and my dad that she can take care of both of us. So I'm sort of in my own little bubble. I'm free from those economic pressures. I'm certainly not free from all pressures. So I don't have that. I haven't been in that kind of position. So I'm glad you called. And it just goes to show. I mean, you know, we have to take it deeper. That's why I try to go into, you know, taking it to a deeper level, that what is the dilemma? You know, what created this dilemma and how can we get out of it? If we do, you know, if we do want to go in a different direction, we obviously, you're a case example. We can't do it by ourselves. By ourselves, we're left on, you know, we're left basically in, you know, to what's given us by, what the options that are given us by the system. And we all have to, you know, I've certainly had various jobs and we all have to make do within the system. The problem is we all get so caught up into having to, as you're saying, is to make it in that system, that we often don't have the time and energy to be able to fight it on a bigger level and actually live the way we want to live, I think.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I love what I do. I have an awesome trade and I really love my business and I love my neighborhood and my community and all of that stuff. So I don't even regret that. I get that I just don't want anybody talking about vomiting in my face while I'm on my way to work. I don't want to hear that. So I almost just turned it off and said, screw you this morning, KBU. But I can't do that because I love KBU too much. I just needed to call and say, hey, that really sucks. That's a sucky thing to hear while I'm on my way to work. And she shouldn't be talking about me like that. So, but I got to go because I am on my way to work. I really appreciate you putting me on the air and chatting this through with me, though.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. I appreciate that. That was good to hear.
Hey.
All right. And you too can call and respond or go in a different direction. 503-231-8187. That's what talk radio is all about. Goodness, we're 20 minutes from the end already. How'd that happen? So coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Political Perspectives presents Sojourner Truth Radio and an interview with Ramona Africa, the sole survivor of the 1985 bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. At 10, as always, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, in commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, the food show talks with Liz Carlisle, the author of Lentil Underground, Renegade Farmers and the Future of Food in America. KBOO keeps you informed and your mind active. And you can always get involved in various ways. As Julie mentioned, she contributes regularly. You too can. I'm sure many of you have. If you haven't yet, go to kboo.fm, click on donate, become a member, or just go to our website, kboo.fm, and look and get familiar with us. Go to volunteer, see how you can get involved that way. If you do have a business, and I agree with Julie that I have nothing personally against entrepreneurs, unless you're a hedge fund manager or a big-time capitalist, then I probably wouldn't like you. But even then, people can change. Like a Scrooge. I've seen a couple Scrooge movies recently. We can talk about that too. Anyway, go to the underwriter thing on the menu bar thing. Look up underwriting at kbo.fm. At the bottom is one place you can see. At the top of the menu bar, I think it says get involved. You can look at various ways of getting involved. Okay, I've said enough. We probably have more callers. Okay, we got Tim up first, then Jerry, you're on deck. Go ahead, Tim.
Hi. Hey, getting back to your earlier topic about organizing things for change, I think that there are lots of different groups right now working for change on different issues. And a lot of those organizations have grown into national as well as local organizations. I think what we need to do is call for a People's Congress of the leaders of the change, pro-change, progressive movements, right? To sit down together and work out a concrete plan of action and a way to get the message out to the masses. And I think that can also be done at the local level, whether it be state, county, or city, and even in small city, there are always some progressive groups, some progressive-minded people that we need to sit down together and talk about what we really want to see and how we can do it and make a plan and start coordinating. We need to do it on a coordinated level because we don't want a bloodbath revolution. We want to change. We want a revolution of change of heart, but also practical changes. Like the lady who is afraid the lady who just called about her business, don't want to take her business away from her or other people. We want people, that's the whole purpose of change, is so that everybody has food on the table. And so not that we want to take it away from anybody, but everyone needs to eat. Everyone needs to have opportunities to learn, to be what they can be, to transform themselves and our society. So,
yeah, well, you know, there's been various efforts like that over the years. Unfortunately, there tends to be so much factionalization and kind of like ideological divides that I see it very difficult.
Yes,
I don't know if you remember the, I don't know how long you've been around Portland, but there was the Alliance for Social Change, I believe it was called, in the early 80s, that was basically what you're saying. It had this umbrella of all these social change organizations in the Portland area. And, well, I don't know exactly, but my understanding is maybe their failure was that they kind of got big grants, and then the grant money stopped, and they really didn't have the...
Yeah, but Paul, it wasn't as much of a crisis then as it is now.
Right.
Now we have, if Trump is reelected and strengthened, then we're really screwed, man.
No, I know. I understand.
It could be forever.
I agree.
Might be
I agree.
Our last chance.
I agree. So we need to put these ideas out in concrete forms. So people basically need to draw up some sort of proposal for some sort of a People's Congress of the People's Republic of Portland, if we're serious about that, and you know, it needs to start with some sort of like organizing committee or something.
I'm not talking about an independent country or nothing. I'm talking about just
I didn't say you were. I said some sort of organizing vehicle is what you're talking about. So and the Congress, you know, means basically that people are doing it. There's some sort of decision making going on, that people are actually making decisions for themselves about the direction that we need to go in. They're not necessarily calling for a violent overthrow of the government, but we're also not just sort of getting together to sort of make vague to sort of present ideas. We're getting together to actually discuss together what needs to be done here in Portland, and then in unity with other people. But it's a decision making. It's a kind of a plenary assembly type of thing. Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I envision would be that people from different groups would get together and discuss what they want to see for a future, and clarify that and discuss what kind of first steps need to be taken, and then present that to the people, the masses of people, maybe even to lead to a third party or something. But a real clear message is what needs to be done and why and how we're going to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I gave out my, you can reach me through my email here at KBOO. I gave out a couple of options through the KBOO.FM Wednesday Talk Radio page, or through my my own email that I've given out, paulrkbu@kboo.org. I'm just one person, though. If something like this was going to happen, it would have to be a conversation amongst the various groups,
organizers.
What's that?
Be a good show to have on KABU.
Well, I think it needs to be an ongoing thing on KABU. I think KABU people ourselves need to have our own sort of Congress, as it were. We need to discuss as a collectivity ourselves these questions as well. So, yeah, thank you very much for calling and bringing that up. That's near and dear to my heart.
Thank you, Paul. You do a great job, and it's always interesting.
All right.
Take care, brother.
All right, man. We got 10 minutes to go, and we got a couple calls at least. Jerry is on deck. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. I've been listening to your conversations with other people and with your orientation toward trying to get some kind of peace in the world. And I think, I don't know whether you're familiar with a book by Lustig. It's called The Hacking of the American Mind. But that book outlines very clearly the process that's been going on in this country for a long, long time toward coalescing power and corporatizing the world in such a way that the power stays in one place and everybody else runs around like chickens with no heads. And we're part of the chickens.
Okay. Well, that's I always like it when people have concrete suggestions for readings. The Hacking of the American Mind. What's the author? Do you know?
Lustig. Lustig.
Oh, you said that at the very beginning. I heard that.
I did. He's a physician. He's an engineer. He's a researcher. He's an expert in the metabolic syndrome, which is what the American public is stuck with. And if you look around, you'll see a lot of fat people, and the reason they're fat is because of the way they eat.
I want to push back on that. I don't think we should talk that way about people's weight, because I think there's various causes, and some people are quite comfortable with their weight. So I think that's something we should avoid talking about. But
oh yeah, you're right. They've learned how to be comfortable with their weight when they're ill. They don't realize that they're ill, because they don't realize that what they've been eating and what they love to eat is a totally wrong thing for them.
Okay. Well,
and if you don't understand that, you might also look at the metabolic syndrome. You read it yourself. It's on YouTube. You can pick it up on Wikipedia, and it'll give you a whole outline.
Okay, well, this is...
You'll have a different orientation, and I'm not being pejorative when I say fat people. Fat people know they're fat. They hate it. They don't like it. And I think
we're going in a direction that we don't really I think we're going in a direction we don't really need to go in. You were talking about the hacking of the American mind, which I think is a valuable contribution. The whole issue of weight is a complex one that probably is best not to go into unless we want to go much deeper into it. But I thank you for calling and suggesting that reading, Hacking of the American Mind by Lustig. Thank you very much for calling.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm sorry to try to teach you something.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Well, the quality of your phone line is not very good, so it's probably not very easy to hear. So we're just going to let you go. Thank you for calling, Jerry. And Joe is back, who called earlier, so we're going to put him to the front of the stack. Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you. I'll be quick, and I know there's a little conversation drift. I wanted to recommend a movie that I was reminded of when Sean brought up the 10-year anniversary of the financial crisis. It's called Margin Call. I reviewed this on a KABU program called The Old Mole Variety Hour a few years ago when it came out, and it is a fictionalization of the collapse of the big banks, of Bear Stearns, I think, though they don't name it in that way. And I recommend it because it has a very great story in it about how humans have been appropriated by capital as almost a kind of other being, although that's not like the device in the film. And there is in particular this conversation between an older character and a newer broker, both of whom come from other backgrounds other than finance. And the older character was a civil engineer. The newer one was a rocket scientist. And it just gives you an idea of, you know, what great talents are wasted on the accumulation of money. And the older character says, you know, I used to spend my life designing roads and bridges and, like, saving people hundreds of hours of their lives. And now, you know, I have been reduced to this risk manager for all of these, you know, money men. And I thought when I heard Sean talk about that and express his disdain that it could be cathartic for him and people who might feel like him.
Uh-huh.
Margin call. Like at the margins. Margin call. And you can find our review by just searching on the KBOO website.
It's probably not on Netflix, huh?
I don't know. But it's at the library.
Okay. All right. The library. Speaking of public places. Thank you, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we've got about 6 minutes left. We had Jack. I don't know if he's still on stack here. Go ahead. You're on the air, Jack.
Yeah, I wanted to, if they're still listening, I want to invite Jerry and Sean to Christmas Eve dinner here, so that they can insult all my friends, most of whom are small business people, but small business people not selling widgets or running, you know, corner stores or anything like that. They're mostly artists, and artists have pretty much always, unless they find a really good patron, forced to be small businessmen. You know, make your art, whatever it might be, and you have to sell it somehow or other, and that makes you a small business person. And so I want to just offer them an invitation to come over and
what's the address?
All my friends.
What's the address? Come on, well, you made the invitation.
Yeah, well, you know what? He can do. I won't give the address out, but I'll give you my website, and then they can write to me through there.
Okay,
so that would be the easy way. My name is Jack. In fact, my name is Jack Gable, G-A-B-E-L, and my website is jackgable.com. Come, and they can write to me there, and then we'll make a seat for them at the table, and they can have a whole table full of small business people to insult.
All right, well, you know, I think it's good that he brought it up in the way he did, because, you know, I've heard Sean call in previously, and he hasn't really taken that kind of a sort of it became sort of personalized in a way that I don't want to speak for him, but I don't feel like he really intended it to be exactly that way. It was more like against capitalism in general and the way the way people are forced into having to do things. I stand by my comment. I think all of us, if we really, in our heart of hearts, would rather be something other than even small business, even successful. Community-minded small business people doing what we love. I think we would probably, especially people, I think people who listen to KBOO, I'm hoping anyway, probably have at least a sort of general critique, dis-ease with capitalism and how it makes us, do what money dictates rather than what we want to do. So I think his general critique was of how capitalism forces us into these roles rather than necessarily the people who occupy those roles?
Well, the powers that shouldn't be are definitely dictatorial. And, they're everywhere. Either one of those guys could then could engage my wife in a pretty brisk conversation. She's from Poland, and she could fill them in on the miracles of socialism. You know,
well,
like
now you've opened
plan,
up a,
the plan is all the plan is always 110% above.
Well, this is
what you predicted.
This is a subject we can't get into.
The shelves are always full.
This is a subject we can't get into because we have to leave right now. We're 2 minutes of, and we have to go because that's the end of the show. But you brought up. People always do that. They bring up something that needs extensive discussion, and I wish we could get into it, Jack, but we can't because we're at the end of our time. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. This is Paul Rowland, Wednesday Talk Radio.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee will meet December 21st at 4:30 p.m.
Hey, this is KBOO, KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Time for Political Perspectives. Today presenting Sojourner Truth Radio. And an interview with Ramona Africa, the sole survivor of the 1985 bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Remember that? At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, we got the food show today featuring Liz Carlisle. She's the author of Lentil Underground, Renegade Farmers and the Future of Food in America. And please remember that KBOO keeps you informed with the truth. And you can get involved by making a tax-deductible contribution to community.